It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. On the show today, doppelgangers.
You know that moment when you catch a reflection of yourself before your mind is ready to believe that it is you?
This is Naomi Klein. She's a best-selling author, a big thinker type who's written about climate change, corporate power, and feminism for over 20 years. She has made a name for herself, or so she thought.
We all want to believe that we have some control over how the world sees us. We polish ourselves and try to perfect ourselves and perform ourselves. And when you're being confused with somebody else on an industrial scale, you realize that you just can't control it at all.
For Naomi, the mix-up started about 13 years ago during the Occupy Wall Street protests.
And I was there because I was writing my book, This Changes Everything. And during one of those protests, I went to a public restroom and I was in a stall and I overheard two women talking about me in very unkind terms. Basically, they were trashing me and saying, you know, did you read that article Naomi Klein wrote? Oh my God, like she completely does not understand our movement. And I was just sort of mortified and it brought back every mean girl experience in high school. I had a lot of mean girls in my high school. And then gradually it dawned on me that they were not actually talking about me. They were talking about another Naomi nonfiction writer. So I came out and said to those two women, I think you're talking about Naomi Wolf. You have your Naomis confused.
So mistaking Naomi Klein for Naomi Wolf, it's not entirely surprising. Both are best-selling authors. Both have written sharp critiques of patriarchy, capitalism, global corporations. Naomi Klein even remembers idolizing Naomi Wolf in college when Wolf's debut book, The Beauty Myth, came out.
She was 28 years old when The Beauty Myth came out, and she like wore leather jackets and had amazing hair and looked like Valerie Bertinelli. And I just thought, you can make a career out of sort of trashing patriarchy. And I was inspired by her, to be honest. Yeah. And she was named Naomi. So I was like, could I do that?
So, yeah, in the early 2010s, the Naomis got mixed up a lot, especially on Twitter. And mostly it was kind of funny, maybe a little annoying. But then things took a turn for the weird.
I think it had been happening gradually since 2014 in particular, where she started to have different conspiracy theories about Edward Snowden, about Dominique Strauss-Kahn, about chemtrails and clouds.
The confusion was still relatively harmless. That is, until the pandemic struck.
It accelerated a lot during the pandemic because my doppelganger, Naomi Wolf, is one of those people who really fell down what I see as a disinformation and misinformation rabbit hole about the pandemic, casting it as a bioweapon that was cooked up in a lab in order to destroy the West. Then she said much the same about the vaccines and the vaccine verification apps and became a star on the far right.
Dr. Naomi Wolf.
Naomi, it was suddenly on Steve Bannon's show every day.
A coup situation, a police state situation, and that's not a partisan thing.
That, and so people would scream at me about this and get very angry at me. What happened to you? Or else they would praise me and tell me how much they loved my appearances on Tucker Carlson.
What has become, you know, the best idea since World War II for enslaving the world, you know, the Western world.
What were some of the ideas that were being attributed to you? Do you remember offhand?
That I thought masks were making children lose the ability to smile. That I thought that having to get vaccinated was a coup d'etat, that people who've been vaccinated no longer smell like humans. Someone was extremely upset with me because I had supposedly claimed that the vaccine verification apps were like Jews being forced to wear yellow stars under the Nazis. And so I just wrote, you know, this is, are you sure about that? Or keep your Naomi straight.
Hmm. I mean, to be blamed for that must have been really upsetting, not just creepy.
The whole thing was a very strange experience. I think I felt one of the most recurring doppelganger feelings, which is just helplessness, because you realize that you just can't control it at all. Then, and that there's somebody out there who's doing all of these things that people think is you. And there's not a thing you can do about it. Anything you could do to try to set the record straight will just make it worse. Will just increase the association in people's minds. I no longer felt that I could participate in the public version of me. And I just watched the idea of me merged with the idea of her in the ether, and it all just slip away.
The word doppelganger is German, literally translating to double walker, as in your ghost or shadow. We often use the term to describe two people who look similar in an uncanny way. But in our high-tech world, it can mean so much more. And so on the show today, ideas about doppelgangers. From the mirror world that our online virtual selves live in, to digital twins being built to predict and treat things like cancer, and the mystery of why the moon and Earth are in fact twinsies. So back to Naomi Klein. She ended up writing a book about her experience called Doppelganger. It's a cultural critique of the online world that commodifies our identities to dangerous lengths.
It just struck me that having this confusion out there and out there on the internet of people confusing me for somebody else who was not me was a way of talking about something that was much less specific to my Naomi problem and was more universal to the way we're all kind of confused about whether we have control over ourselves at all in the digital age, right? You know, one of the things that I did as part of this research trip is I watched a lot of films about doppelgangers and read a lot of novels about doppelgangers. And I was really struck that, you know, for filmmakers, everyone from Charlie Chaplin with The Great Dictator to Jordan Peele's films like Us that really work with the figure of the doppelganger, they're often used as a way to capture the menace of a society that is flipping into a doppelganger of itself. Mm-hmm. And specifically the kind of fascist double that exists on that always lurks on the edges of a liberal open society. We know that it can flip. We know that it has flipped. And I feel that fear, right? And so, and the fact that my doppelganger has turned into a doppelganger of her former self, right? Had changed so dramatically, had gone from being this prominent feminist, you know, a Democrat who had advised Al Gore when he ran for president, you know, had really been a big deal on the center left, could now be palling around with Bannon and Carlson and, you know, really consorting with some nefarious characters. Like, people are constantly writing these articles, whatever happened to her, as if she was visited by, like, became like a Stepford wife, right? It just struck me as an interesting way to explore that sense of menace, of it really is possible for us to turn into a collective doppelganger of who we think we are.
There is a passage in your book where you start to grasp the reach that Naomi Wolf was having online. Would you mind reading that for us?
Sure. I admit that when Wolf first started talking about vaccine passports as mass surveillance networks, I really didn't understand the effect it was having. I was focused on the many wrong facts she was sharing, as well as the true fact that her newfound celebrity on Fox was blowing up my own social media. What many of us who were cringe-following Wolf at the time missed was the extent to which her new messaging had struck a chord, not only with Fox's audience, but also with a sizable cohort of people who identify as leftists or progressives and were terrified of the Black Mirror surveillance world she was describing.
Tell us more about what you're writing there and how it, what you started to understand was the reason why people who you would have agreed with or would have been fans of started to share conspiracy theories that felt outlandish.
Yeah, well, in the book, I say that conspiracy culture often gets the facts wrong, but the feelings right. Mm-hmm. And this really struck me when Wolf took her star turn on the right. It was when she started to claim that the vaccine verification apps that we all downloaded onto our phones and for a time were scanned to get into restaurants and concerts and things like that, that these were actually part of some kind of nefarious plot that involved the Chinese Communist Party and Davos and Bill Gates to bring what she called a CCP, Chinese Communist Party, social credit system to the West, and that if we did this, it would be a fascist coup and our government would be able to listen to our phone, not our phone conversations, but our real life conversations in restaurants. We'd be under surveillance all the time. And she became a star on the right for this and a laughingstock, on the liberal left for this. And the sort of snarky comeback about all of it was, wait till they hear about cell phones. A lot of the conspiracies of the COVID era were about surveillance, were about the idea that this was the way to get us all tracked. They were tapping into this all-pervasive fear around a huge loss of privacy that we've all experienced because we've gotten addicted to our cell phones in this way. And we don't know what happens with our data. We don't really understand what happens with the data that's collected on Google Maps. And that is creating an opportunity for conspiracy to spread that really taps into those deep and latent fears.
When we come back, Naomi Klein on how conspiracy theorists profit by tapping into those fears. On the show today, doppelgangers. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Stay with us. It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. On the show today, doppelgangers. We were just talking to writer Naomi Klein, who has spent much of the last decade being confused with the writer Naomi Wolf.
I think I felt one of the most recurring doppelganger feelings, which is just helplessness.
This mix-up started causing a lot of trouble for Klein, especially when Wolf began touting dangerous conspiracy theories.
The World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization have united to create a new world order in which we are dead or disabled or sterilized.
Why would ideas like these attract people like Wolf, who had never leaned extreme right before?
I say that conspiracy culture often gets the facts wrong, but the feelings right.
Klein says liberals and her fellow progressives failed to acknowledge all the pandemic fears, from masking, vaccine mandates, surveillance, to rising inequality and corporate profiteering. This provided an opening.
And I think the failure to do that really rolled out the red carpet for the right to do this kind of what I call a mix and match, right? Well, they take a few of traditional kind of left-wing issues. There are days when Steve Bannon sounds like Bernie. There are days where he sounds like me, you know, and then he mixes it with anti-immigrant xenophobia, with anti-Black racism, with this whole very nefarious right-wing agenda and an authoritarian agenda. So I started listening to Bannon, but then found myself just interested in how he was creating what I called a mirror world of everything in the world that I recognize. Mirror publishing companies, mirror social media companies, mirror arguments, mirror currency. But I was also struck by how he would perform a certain kind of inclusivity and kindness, which I think would surprise people who only see clips of Bannon online where he's sort of roaring ferociously about how he's going to, put the heads of his opponents on spikes, which is, part of Steve Bannon for sure. But if you listen to him in greater depth, you see this other side, which where he is part of the opportunism, part of the way he defines himself against the liberals and the leftists is by talking about how mean we are to one another, and how in his world, you know, if you come over, you're going to be treated with kindness. That's why he was so, I think, attracted to Wolf, is that it allows him to perform this willingness to be in conversation with somebody who you would think he would be on the other side.
So it sounds like you think the liberals, Democrats, middle, whatever you want to call them, missed a trick here.
Oh, yeah. But I do think that it is within the power of the left and the center left to not hand over all of these other issues that are traditionally our issues, standing up to corporations and standing up against profiteering, so that he doesn't have such a powerful cocktail to mix.
Do you have any idea what your doppelganger thinks of you? Does Naomi Wolf, has she made any passing comment or mention of what she thinks of the book or you?
It's definitely more than a passing comment. She's posted quite a bit about it. She even has a conspiracy about it, which I'm not going to go into. but she has said that she hasn't read it. So I do wish that she would, because I think that if she did, she would find that it isn't what she thinks it is, that it is kinder than she thinks it is and less about her than she thinks it is.
Hmm. So the irony of you writing this book in some ways is, you started out by having a little bit of a brand problem, right? That people were confusing you with another Naomi. But this book, I mean, I Googled both of you, and it's the book that comes up now. In some ways, you have drowned out mentions of the other Naomi, or at least in my Google. Is it possible to ever really confront your doppelganger? I mean, was that your intention?
Confronting your doppelganger in literature and art always ends badly. You know, Edgar Allan Poe, Dostoevsky,
Dorian Gray.
You know, oh my God. If you try to stab your doppelganger, you will end up bloody on the ground. I think the only way out of a doppelganger tangle, from what I can tell, is really to earnestly believe that a mirror is being held up to you that you have to look at with some honesty and willingness to see a side of yourself that you might not like to see. You know, I often say that sometimes when people describe doppelgangers, they say that it's like looking into a living mirror.
Mm.
But in my experience, it's much worse than that. It's like, because you haven't been able to prepare your mind yet to believe that it's you. You don't have your mirror face on.
Yes.
You don't, you know. And
yes.
And you have to be willing to accept that that might actually be you. And that there's a reason that you're getting confused, that it might be trying to show you something. It might be a challenge to change if you don't like what you see, right? And I'm trying to learn from it.
I guess I'm wondering, do you have advice for people who are listening about how to think of their doppelgangers or their different identities in the world? Should they beware? Should they be kind to them?
My only advice is to cling a little less tightly to the self you think you are. Yeah, and you know, at the end of the book, I quote Iris Murdoch, the British novelist and philosopher, who talks about unselfing as almost a transcendent state where when we behold beauty, whether in the natural world or in a piece of art, when we allow ourselves to be transported by it, what we're doing is we are forgetting about ourselves.
Mm.
And I think it's true that we can really only behold the beauty and tragedy of the world when we are able to unself and not think, what does this mean to me? What can I post about it so that people think I'm the right kind of self? But when we actually just get out of the way and unself and show up, that's what my doppelganger journey taught me, and I have to relearn it about six times a day.
That's Naomi Klein. Her latest book is Doppelganger, A Trip into the Mirror World. You can watch her talks at TED.com. And by the way, we reached out to Naomi Wolf for her comments and did not hear back.